Blog Talk Radio.
This is Equestrian Legacy Radio. Equestrian Legacy Radio is live talk radio for equestrians and those that love the equestrian lifestyle. I'm your host, Gary Holt. We have a great show today, and we're really excited and very pleased that two special guests have been able to join us today. Dr. Chris Herman, MD, from California, is going to be joining us on the phone call. And so, Chris, welcome to you.
Thank you very much.
And we're also pleased to have Dr. Gene Wood, who is the professor emeritus at Clemson University. And so, Gene, we're tickled to death to have you join us today. How are you?
Good, and thank you so much for having me.
Well, you're very welcome, and we're glad to have both of you with us. We're real excited to talk with both of you, and Gene, we're going to start our conversation with you today. You have headed up the National Equestrian Trail Conference, and I believe this is the first year for that will be held in Rock Hill, South Carolina, July the 18th through the 20th. And so there are a lot of folks that have expressed interest in finding out more about the Trail Conference. And if you would, tell us just a little bit about what the motivation and the purpose for the conference is and what the need for this type of program would be.
Okay. First, I'll give you a little bit of background and history here. I am a trail rider for the last 30 years pretty intensively. But in my professional life, I was a forest wildlife ecologist. And so conservation has been what my life is about, and trail ride. Today, my life seems to revolve around trails and trail horses, but there's always this conservation background to it. In 1998, it was pretty apparent to me that there was a real lack of understanding among trail riders about where trails are. They're primarily on the public lands, and those lands are owned primarily for conservation of natural resource and cultural resource reasons, and so stated in law, and the agencies managing them are charged with that protection. So in 1998, we had a conference called, it was entitled Recreational Horse Trails and Forest Ecosystems, and we had it was the first conference of its kind. A big turnout, 175 people from 37 states. It was at Clemson University. And then in 2000, 2001, and 2002, we had the first three Southeastern Equestrian Trails conferences. And those were all based around themes of trying to educate trail riders about natural resource conservation issues. The SETEC, Southeastern Equestrian Trails Conference, TTEC acronym, has been held continuously since 2000 until last year, and the last year was in Kentucky, and just a great conference there. But for various reasons there, which we don't have time to go into here, there's been this push to elevate to national level conferencing. So this will be the first national equestrian trails conference by that title. And it'll be here in, as you've said, in Rock Hill, South Carolina. Closest airport is Charlotte. And the theme for the conferencing is, the motto, I might say, preserving a cultural heritage, and that heritage being trail riding, in a natural heritage setting through education. And this particular conference is focused on helping the American trail rider understand conservation policy. We have some really top-notch people from around the country coming and talking about various aspects of conservation policy that are critically important to trail riders in terms of how, of our desires for access to the public lands and how we expect to use them. Actually, legislation, most people don't think about trail riding and the Endangered Species Act, and yet that is a big deal. And again, we don't have time to go into all of the things on that right now, but as a case in point, a representative of the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service and a representative of the National Park Service will be talking about the endangered mussels that were in a stream at Big South Fork National Recreation Area that shut down a horse trail for quite a while.
Wow.
And that issue has been going on for about at least 5 or 6 years that I know of now, and it's still not resolved. And they're going to be explaining that, why that's important to trail riders to understand that.
Right. Well, Big South Fork's one of my favorite places to ride, Gene, and I know it is for a lot of folks that are across the country as well, but it's an issue that's involved in trails all across the country. What's happening as far as the use of trails on public lands by trail riders? Is it on the decline? Is it on the increase? Or are we about status quo?
Well, I think the way we have to look at it is the agencies themselves, of course, have been downsized and downfunded. In fact, in my view, underfunded. So there's been a tendency to close trails, particularly in wilderness areas, where they're so expensive and difficult to maintain. To keep them, and the law requires this, that they be kept user-safe and environmentally sound. Well,
right.
That requires maintenance, and the agencies don't have time to. Now, the trail riders, particularly through backcountry Western America, have stepped up to that, particularly on the wilderness areas, to say, okay, we will assist in this. We will pack in supplies and tools and so on for crews that are working back there, and sometimes we are able to take our own crews back there and do certain things. And they reach agreements on some of this. So some of those trails are being maintained. But there's this constant pressure to decrease trail mileage. And I always tell people, and I have for years, if you took a vote among all land managers in the nation today, just to stand up yes or no vote, leave the horses on the public lands or take them off, the simple majority would vote take them off.
Well, and that seems to be a challenge that we have not only on national lands but also on any government-operated facility. A few years ago, there was some discussion about closing horse trails at Percy Warner Park in Nashville. And we have a tremendous trail system right in almost the heart of downtown Nashville, Tennessee, that people certainly enjoy. But there was a controversy there about maintaining the trails and also mixed use of the trails, and I would suppose that's a challenge that we have across the country in any of our systems and public lands today, as to far as use for hikers and bikers and ATV users, as well as the sharing the lands with the trail riders.
Well, you're exactly right, and one of the things that we're pushing, and we have a very significant youth trails program as part of this conference, and I've written a booklet on that, and so it's on my website. And this business of ethics, trail and land ethics and stewardship, is what we're pushing big time, as hard as we can. And what we're trying to get across is that trail riders are going to have to build a profile as conservationists. And they're going to have to become noted for their ethics, their ethical treatment of the lands and of other users of these lands, and their stewardship. And when we can do that, then, you know, we are making progress towards justifying keeping ourselves on the trails. Now, let me say one other thing about that. I push all the time, and most people still don't get it, the importance of trying to establish in the minds of agencies that trail riding is an American cultural heritage. And I believe that as much as I believe I'm sitting in this chair. Most of our frankly, all of our environmental legislation talks about the preservation of cultural resources. Trail riding is a uniquely, or at least not unique to our nation. Australians have a big tradition in this and some others, but it is a very important cultural heritage. And the horse itself is a cultural heritage. And I tell people, you don't believe that, count the number of commercials on TV in which there's a cowboy or a horse in it. And how many Americans will ever even touch a horse?
That's right. And of course, everybody knows that the Budweiser commercials with the Clydesdales are some of the most popular during the Super Bowl season. So horses are important in Americans' minds. And again, as you said, whether or not they have an opportunity to be associated with a horse or not, it still has a legacy and a heritage that's important to preserve. Gene, what will we be learning at the conference that's coming up?
Well, I mentioned trying to inform, the deal is to try to get people to understand, okay, when we're only going to hit the high points and sort of the most important federal legislation that affects recreational trail use with horses. And telling people, okay, this is how you need to get involved. We will have a speaker, for instance, on the National Environmental Policy Act. And the title of that presentation, Public Involvement, Heartbeat of the National Environmental Policy Act, because the Act requires public involvement. You have to be at those meetings whenever planning hearings are being held by the public agencies on what they're going to be doing with their lands. The law requires it. Now, when you show up, you got to know what you're talking about, because I can assure you the other groups that are concerned about these lands know what they're talking about. Sierra Club, they got this stuff down pat. They can recite it in their sleep. Audubon, same way. National Wild Turkey Federation, same way. National Elk Foundation, same way. On and on. Isaac Walton, Trout Unlimited. Where are the trail riders in all this? We are children in the dark. We have got to come out of that.
Well, and the organizations that are taking the lead in that would be conferences like the one that's going on later in July, and Backcountry Horsemen. What other organizations are taking a position that we could get involved in?
Well, Equestrian Land Conservation Resource is very, very important to this. The American Horse Council. The legislative director for the American Horse Council will be making a presentation there. And they do monitor and get involved in hearings on various things regarding federal legislation that might impact trail riders. The Backcountry Horsemen of America, ELCR, the Equestrian Land Conservation Resource, and American Horse Council, probably the three most important. And let me just, and one thought, too, I need to correct. I'm not in charge of the conference. I am the program chair, and I'm doing the youth program. But the conference is sponsored by the South Carolina Horsemen's Council, and Bill Steele, who's president of the council, is also chair of this thing. And so he would be actually the person who officially heads it up, but I am the program chair and all this other stuff.
Well, great. Well, you don't need to be bashful. I know you've taken a major lead in getting this out and getting people involved, and so we appreciate that very much. Talk a little bit, Gene, about the youth program and how important it is for the future of preserving our trails to have our young people involved, both as trail riders and being aware of the challenges that are faced in having places to ride and to continue the heritage that we have of trail use.
Well, I think it's very important, and it's interesting to me, and it's almost a contradiction, because we see, as I talk to people that are my age or are beginning to get towards that, which, you know, I'll be 73 in the fall, you know, they say, well, look, gosh, you know, we don't see any young kids coming on. We don't see young people doing this. And so when we go to a meeting, look around, all we see is gray hair or no hair. And that's true. You know, and that is very true. Because the future lies with our young people and getting them involved and keeping them involved. Now, talking to one of the people from the Forest Service is going to be helping us, and she's very much, in fact, she's a ranger for the Delta National Forest now in Mississippi, and she's very hot on this stuff, spent her life on her father was a horse trainer, she spent her life on a horse and all these kinds of things, and we were talking about it. She's a lot younger than I am, and she a little closer to it, although I've got a couple of granddaughters in their teens. But she says, you know, you go to a horse show, okay, your 8 to 13 age classes are filled. They're overflowing. You get up to the 15 and 16, you might have two or three people in a lot of them. 18, 20 and so on, they aren't there. Well, you know, that's sort of a natural kind of a thing a little bit, but I think there's some things that we can do to change things, to change a little bit of that. But not only do we see that change over in interest as boys discover girls and girls discover boys in those teenage years and so on, but it continues on through the 20s and 30s and into the 40s, and it's becoming increasingly difficult to own and keep a horse.
That's true.
So if we're going to keep this thing alive, we have got to keep people in touch with their horses right on through their lives. And I think trails is a good way to do it versus, you know, the more expensive venues. It's expensive enough just to keep a horse. Then when you start going to a show every week, you know, and all that goes with that, it gets really expensive.
It does.
Trail riding
expensive.
Is always there.
Yeah. Let me bring in the young party that's on the phone call with us today. Chris, you're more the age of my daughters, and congratulations on your new child because you're a new mother as well. So I know this is an important topic for you. In California, and I know we're going to talk about versatility and the different things that you're involved in just a little bit in more depth, but do you do any trail riding? Have you done some trail riding out in California?
I have done some. I don't do the trail riding you guys seem to be doing as far as going out to public lands and stuff. I do occasionally with some friends, but most of my, you know, quote-unquote trail riding is you know, just around. I'm fortunate to live in the Sassoon Valley area of Northern California, which is one valley over from Napa. And so I just take off and go through the vineyards and, you know, around and make our own trails, kind of, so to speak. And when I grew up in Illinois, that, you know, you just take off down the road and or down somebody's, you know, pasture, and you just go through, you know, nobody locked gates at that point, and you just kind of just kept going.
Right.
And so that's kind of the trail riding I grew up on and that I kind of do. But I do have some friends that are really into trail riding, and so periodically I'll go with them to some of the state parks or national parks, mostly state parks.
Right. Well, you know, and let's touch on just a minute what Gene was talking about as far as seeing kids in the show ring.
Yeah.
Where we've got our younger people, where the classes are pretty full, and then when you get into that teenage group where there's not quite as much interest, it seems. Do you see that in the shows that you're involved in?
You know, our area in Northern California is fairly sparse as far as walking horses are concerned, and we just don't have a lot of youth, period. And actually, we probably have as many teenagers as we do young kids. But, you know, that's a real small sample size. So I'm trying to think of some of the open shows that I go to. And I would have to agree, you know, there are much more in the younger group. But I wouldn't say they're, most of the open shows are lacking in the teenage years either. But I know from personal experience it's tough. You know, you really have to have a real love yourself, and then also it's at that stage it is so important that your parents are supportive. And I know I was incredibly fortunate to have a horse crazy mom that supported me through all this, but you know, so many kids are horse crazy kids, but they don't have the parental support or the financial support, as was mentioned, to really keep going. And you know, it's not just boys, you know, you get into high school and there's increased workload.
Right.
And you know, a lot of kids that are competitive or competitive in other areas, other sports. So take, you know, things start taking a back seat. You get to college and it's real difficult, and to try to maintain your college schedule, and you know, a lot of times you're leaving town and you're leaving your horse behind. So there's a lot of challenges around the high school and college times. But you know, it takes as much dedication to continue with horses as it does if you were going to continue with any other sport.
Right. Well, and let's go, Gene. Let's go back to the trail conference again for just a minute. And I appreciate those comments, Chris, because it's good to have a younger person's insight when a couple of old guys are talking on the phone.
When I'm a young one, that's scary.
Well,
I'm not young anymore.
Oh gosh. Well, we want to make sure that your child and my grandchildren and others mm-hmm. have the opportunity to participate with horses and horse activities in any way that they'd like to. But it is a challenge with the trails. It seems to me that when we look at membership in our breed, the majority of folks are involved in using their horses for pleasure, and the majority of that is for trail riding. And I mentioned before our phone call that we had a young lady that started a group on Facebook, and they're right at 6,000 members of trail riders right now. And if I look at some of the postings that I've seen, and this goes back to what you were saying, Gene, most of these folks are a little older group of folks that are riding. But the future of the trails is what this conference is about, and how to talk with the agencies and for people to be able to get involved in that. I think one of the sayings of a group is travel light and leave no trace. And you have a saying that you have for your website, isn't it? What is that?
Oh, yeah, it's ride with a smile, a light hand.
A light hand. Right.
Ride with a smile, a light hand, and lightly upon the land.
So again, what will folks learn in addition to dealing with agencies? What else will you be talking about at the conference?
Well, we have some breakout sessions. One that really hits trails pretty squarely on the first one is characteristics of a good horse trail, followed by traits of a good trail horse. I'll be doing that first one, and then the second one will be by a trail horse clinician, Mike Kenzie, here in South Carolina, on the traits of a good trail horse. And then my friend Jenny Grawke, who is now past director of the Kentucky Horse Council, will be speaking on the characteristics of a good trail rider. And she's going to be hitting this thing about stewardship and so on, as well as skills. And then another session in which the Backcountry Horsemen of America will be talking about their organization, American Horse Council will be talking about their organization. And then Jan Hancock from Phoenix is the equestrian representative on the board of directors for American Trails, and she will be talking about the role of the trail riding interest in the American Trails organization. And then on the next day, the breakout sessions, there will be one assessment of trail riding relative to other outdoor recreation activities in the nation. And the Forest Service has put out some publications on this, and the fellow who is the pioneering scientist for all of that work will be giving a presentation at this conference and talking about how they gather that data and how they rate trail riding among about 60-some other outdoor recreation activities in the nation, not just on the national forest system, but in the nation. And then there will be a person from Oregon who's looked at a lot of this data and how it's gathered and so on, who will be kind of, you know, taking a little bit of a tangential view to that. And then there will be several, ELCR will be there talking about private lands as resources for recreational trails. There'll be people there talking about conservation easements as open space where horses could be used, and then two pitch speakers will be talking about really trails in urban areas.
Okay. All right. Well, and one of the things, and Chris was talking about that in regard to where she lives, she does have access to some lands that they can ride on there. Seems that California, in certain areas, kind of leads in that, Chris. And I have some good friends that were from Connecticut that had a similar situation in the rural area where they were raising horses, where they were able to just ride and had easements from all the property owners. So I guess, Gene, ECL probably is the leading organization as far as addressing those concerns.
ELCR, right. Equestrian
right.
Land Conservation Resource. Yes, they are, and that's what they were organized for. Really, they started not so much on trails, but it was other kinds of interest. People just having problems with having horse farms,
right.
Particularly as the suburbs moved out to them. People who had in their younger years or in other generations or whatever, fox hunting had been a tradition. All of a sudden, it's becoming very hard to find places to do fox hunting because there's just not enough space, not enough open space.
Right.
And that really, ELCR came out of that kind of a thing. But they are also very interested in just recreational trails.
Okay, well, that's good information. What
I have to add, with California is in Northern California, at least with the gated horse people, there's an incredibly active group called the Gold Country Gated Horse Club that they have trail rides all the time. I mean, in all sorts of places in California, find all sorts of places to ride. And in our the organization that I've been involved in, the Northern California Walking Horse Association, we've been trying to branch out and move with them to have more trail rides for our members. And actually last year, the lady who's our current president, Nicole Shoppe, put together a little fun show that was on Saturday. And then everybody kind of spent the night, and then we had a huge poker trail ride the next day. And I had, I think, 50 horses or something like that participating in the trail ride that she put together.
Wow, that's great.
It's really popular, and we're finding that if we're combining, like a little fun show or which we do versatility stuff, which I'll get into, but along with a trail ride, you get some of the trail people into to play in the show ring, especially when it's informal, and then you get the show people out on the trails, and it's a really good way to promote both.
Well, and that's great, and I think, too, and we'll talk about this a little bit more, but the opportunity to expose people to the Tennessee Walking Horse through the open shows that you participate in, Chris, I think is a great opportunity for us as well on that. Gene, what would you hope for people to take away from the conference?
Well, let me just make one comment, kind of following up this last little point here.
Okay.
We aren't running into any shortages of trail riders, particularly as trails access to trails has become more limited. We're actually overcrowding trails that we have for the most part. So there's not really a shortage of people to ride at the moment. The problem is the people who are riding are taking trails for granted. They just assume that trails are out there. God dropped them out of the sky and maintains them with sending angels down or something or other. It doesn't happen that way. It's one thing we teach the kids, we really emphasize. Every trail is a human construct on the land. Somebody had the idea for it. They designed it. Human effort and money constructed it. Human effort and money maintained it. Most trail riders don't give it a second thought.
Right.
And this is something that just is absolutely critical to change. And really, that is what we would really like people to go away from the conference, that understanding. Now, to a large extent, now we're going to be preaching to the choir, because a lot of people who will put the time and the money into coming to these conferences, they already know this stuff. They know the problem, at least, or have a good grasp of a lot of problems. A lot of them don't. But the thing that we want to get across to trail riders is that trail riders have to elevate their profiles as conservationists, as people who are sensitive to and want to preserve our natural heritage, and we want to preserve our cultural heritage of riding trail horses in that natural heritage environment. But in order to do that, we are going to have to become a lot more involved and a lot more eloquent in the way we present and defend our positions on this stuff.
Well, I would have to agree with that, and I know that when I have been out on trails and ridden, I pretty much have taken for granted that we have use of them. The only confrontations that we've had has been on the mixed-use portion, and a lot of problems with the ATVs back up in the Big South Fork area that I think has been resolved now as far as use of trails, but just the fact that those trails need to be treasured and that we need to participate in making sure that they stay open and that they're maintained, particularly in the light of the economy that we've been going through for the last several years and are still experiencing as well on that. So let me mention this. This is a call-in show, and the phone number, if you'd like to call and talk to Gene or Chris, is 213-943-3396, and we'll be happy to take your phone calls, and I know we've got several folks that expressed interest in being on the live show today or listening to the live show, so we encourage you to call in and make your comments as well. Gene, we'll come back just a little bit on yours, but Chris, let's talk a little bit about versatility. And one of the things that we're doing is that coming up in just about another week and a half, we have the World Versatility Show that will be held at the Miller Coliseum in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. And that's produced by the Tennessee Walking Horse Breeders and Exhibitors Association. And so I know you've been active in the versatility program for a number of years. So first of all, tell me a little bit about how you got started. You mentioned your mother, Bonnie, a minute ago, and what a blessing she was there for you. But talk a little bit about how you got started and then how you got involved in versatility and what you participate in.
Sure. So a lot of flukes in life, you know. When my parents moved to Northern Illinois from California, they bought a farm, and a gentleman had a horse that he kept there, and he asked if he could continue to keep the horse there. And my mom was a horse nut, and she said, sure, as long as I can ride it. And that horse ended up being a Tennessee Walking Horse. And my mom had a bad back and really loved riding that horse, and he was smooth as glass. And so when they looked to get some horses, they bought two Tennessee Walking Horses as well as a couple Crazy Arabs. And we had kind of a mixed pasture for a while. And when I started becoming about 6-7 years old, my mom thought it'd be good for me to have some riding lessons. And lo and behold, in the next small town over was a lady named Joan Crum, and she gave riding lessons. And Joan Crum was a walking horse person and very active in the TWHBEA versatility program. And so I started taking lessons from Mrs. Crum, and she kept talking about the versatility program, and I went in my first show when I was 7, was signed up with the versatility program by the time I was 8, they found a show horse for me, and I started participating in the versatility program when I was 8 years old, mostly going to 4-H shows and open shows. In fact, it was probably, I don't know, 2-3 years before I went to a walking horse show. I showed in open shows, starting out with rail classes and gradually trying to, you know, to do more of the real true versatility events. Unfortunately, my horse developed arthritis, and we needed to start with another horse. And that horse was a horse named Delight's High Tone, and he really got me going with versatility. And we did everything with him. Everything from, you know, just the standard English and Western trail or English and Western rail classes, the obstacle trail rides, water glass, now the untimed skills events, to the timed speed events from barrels and poles. Jumped with them a little bit, not well, but, you know, a little bit. And we ended up getting enough points that we won the Youth Superior Championship when I was 12.
Wow.
And because I was actually the youngest person at the time, there have been younger since, I had enough time to start working on a second horse before I reached the 18-year mark that put me, you know, that would have put me into the adult range. And I had another horse named Johnny's Glory, and she was actually a much more flashy, you know, show horse. But everything I ride has got to do some versatility now, and I actually worked with her, and we did, you know, I taught her trail and how to do a lot of the other events. She didn't do the speed events that my first horse did, but, you know, we were able to do enough and enough events that I won a second Superior Championship before I hit the 18-year-old mark. And I was the first person to do that. Now, since then, there's been other people that have done that as well. And then I... So, you know, so versatility started out in my blood through Mrs. Crum, and that's what my passion has been ever since. And, you know, we're talking about the adult years. You know, I did fine through school. Horse showing was my big sport. But then, you know, you get into college, and it's a little harder, especially when for half my college years, my parents are back in Illinois, and I went to school at UC Davis in California. So, you know, you go back and try to participate in shows and stuff, but you don't have as much time to ride.
Right.
Even when my parents moved out here, you know, you still have a full class schedule and a lot of other priorities. And then I went to medical school, and that really curtailed everything. And I kind of started to understand why a lot of the youth that were active in the versatility program kind of disappeared, and you don't hear from them as much. But then when I was in my residency, my mom and I were back in Tennessee, and we had a little old discussion, shall we say, about how I wanted to get a horse that I wanted to keep in Sacramento when I was doing my residency, and my mom thinking that probably wasn't the best idea that I should concentrate on my residency. And two things happened that changed. Actually, one thing happened is my mom wanted to buy a young horse for her to work on, and unfortunately, she had a stroke during that time on the last day of the celebration and the sales. And during that time, we had our eye on a horse, and I called a friend of ours, and I said, "Would you just, you know, go buy that horse, take it home, and we'll figure this out later," because I didn't want my mom coming out of the stroke and me losing her horse.
Right.
And that my mom was not in, you know, she did well after the stroke and was able to ride again, but not in a condition to, you know, work a young horse. And so I ended up taking that horse to Sacramento. And, you know, he was, my friend had put just the bare bones on him, taught him right, left, and stop. But everything else we did during my residency and since then. And that horse has, I'm proud to say, has been completely 100% amateur owned and trained, and he would probably be doing a whole lot better if it wasn't for my schedule, but he's been as good of a horse to put up with me and the lack of training schedule he's had. And that's my current versatility horse. His name is I'm Billy the Kid, and we're 1 point away from our Adult Supreme Championship, which will finish, you know, this year, obviously.
He's
probably been my more true versatility horse as far as participation and everything we've done jumping against, at mostly jumping schooling shows. I've done dressage with him at schooling shows against all breeds. He's actually a whiz at the timed speed events, the barrels and poles, and it takes actually a pretty good quarter to beat him.
We're kind of breaking up there, Chris.
I'm sorry.
Maybe your battery a little bit going.
Is it any better?
No, it's still kind of difficult. It's kind of like marbles.
Okay. Maybe better call back.
Yeah, why don't you try that, and let's pick right back up where we were.
I will call back momentarily.
Okay. Hello there. You're on the line. Hello?
Gary, I'm still here, but I couldn't hear her either.
Who now?
Hi. Who do we have here?
This is Linda Starnes. Can you hear me now?
Well, hi, Linda. We can hear you. Are you going to sing for us today?
I can if you want me to. But I'm actually in Lewisburg, Tennessee at the Tennessee Walking Horse Breeders and Exhibitors Association. I'm at their home place right now.
Well, great.
And I'm
glad
listening to your radio show on one of their computers.
Well, good deal. I hope you're enjoying it and everybody else that's listening there today.
It's great. And of course, trails is one of my main focuses, along with, of course, the versatility show, both. And just wanted to mention on trails, with all the budget cuts that national parks are going through, you know, a lot of them don't get much help as far as the trails right now, so it's a super time to jump in and offer assistance, you know, to the park rangers and that kind of thing, because they're having to shut down campgrounds and can't monitor campgrounds like they used to. So this is a really good time to try to jump in and help national parks, and I'm sure that's true across the nation, just not at Mammoth Cave National Park. I'm sure that's true everywhere.
Right. Have you encountered any of those closures, either one of you, Jean or Linda?
Linda sure has. I mean, like, they've shut down one of the ferries in our national park at Mammoth Cave, and the whole campground there is gone. And I know for a fact that lots of the trails aren't being monitored by the park rangers like they used to, because they just don't have the funds available to do that with.
Right.
Yeah,
right.
There's a general order for I know that's in the Park Service and the Forest Service, but so many campgrounds are being closed. I forget what those numbers are across the nation that are being closed because of the sequester situation.
Yeah.
And it's probably, even if we ever get this sequester thing resolved, it may not improve a whole lot. Some of the areas that are being kept open are actually getting, as far as horse, that were horse camps to start with. Here and there, there are horsemen's or trail organizations that are going in and saying, if you'll leave it open, we will take care of it.
Great, great.
According to your directions.
I think that we have Chris back on the line. Chris, are you
there?
Yeah.
Is this any better?
Oh, you sound like you're in the same room with me now.
Okay, I apologize for that.
Say hi to Linda Starnes. She just joined us a few minutes ago, just as you were getting
Linda.
Off.
Hey, Chris. Hi.
Yeah, this is Linda has been in versatility forever.
Well, we could almost call Linda Miss Versatility, I think. She does everything with the horses and helps out with everything that's involved in the pleasure end of things. So let's pick up, Chris, where you were. And Linda, you're welcome to stay on the line if you would and join in too.
Okay.
But Chris, we were talking about your activities. We were one point away from your Supreme Championship, and then we kind of started losing you.
Yeah, well, this horse that I'm working on now, I think, you know, he's a little bit more of a true versatility horse and how he's doing the events. And like I said, I still do a lot of open horse shows. And I think that's one great thing about the versatility program is in areas where there aren't a lot of walking horses and you don't have a lot of walking horse shows and judges that know how to judge a walking horse, the great thing about versatility is you can go to these open horse shows and there's a lot of the events where gait doesn't matter. It doesn't matter if the judge doesn't know how to judge a walking horse. If your horse goes over the jumps properly, it doesn't matter what breed he is. And I'll tell you, it's really fun, you know, getting a few of these, you know, quarter horse people's eyes bugging out when you can show them that your horse can do what theirs does. And, you know, maybe my horse is not a power reiner. He's certainly not going to, you know, be competitive against some good reining horses, but I take him to some of these schooling shows, and he can hold his own. And last couple of years, I pretty much beat all but three horses in barrels and poles. So,
wow.
And, you know, even in open horse shows. And in jumping, he actually does quite well, and we've won several classes at jumping shows. And one thing is I found the dressage people to be quite open to having a walking horse doing the dressage test. And what I'll do is I'll print out the dressage tests that have been made through the National Walking Horse Association and the TWHBA, and I just give them to the judge, and then the judge, you know, basically what my instructor says is, you know, dressage is dressage, and the principles are the same whether your horse is walking or trotting. And, you know, most of the time the judges are more than happy to take up the challenge and are more than happy to see a walking horse participating in dressage. So you don't have to worry about getting a walking horse show or a walking horse class. You can get the points and participate in this program no matter what area of the country you're in. And it's a whole lot of fun. And the other thing I'll say is, you know, there is the World Versatility Show coming up. It's July 25th through the 27th, and I think walking horse people are really pretty gracious as far as being show people anyway. But the versatility people are even more so. I think we all just absolutely love it when somebody is wanting to try versatility, and even if you're kind of a newbie, you know, even though it says World Versatility Show. You don't have to be, you know, a high-class world versatility person to participate. And it's a lot of fun, and everybody in the versatility community is just more than happy to see people try new things and to encourage them and help them out. And I think it makes the show a great deal of fun.
Well, I agree with that, and I'm excited to see the dressage classes that are going to be going on. I had to admit the other day that it had been a number of years since I had attended the World Versatility Show, but I certainly plan on being there this time. And I've encouraged our listeners to show up and see the different disciplines that the walking horse is involved in that they may not be used to seeing at just some of the regular rail classes that they're accustomed to. So whether you've not participated or whether you're a participant, we'd encourage you to make sure to plan on coming out to the show, and we certainly would like to have a large number of folks that decide they'd like to participate as a exhibitor and participant in those things. Let me ask you, Chris, and I was kind of looking, I know I went back through and looked at some of the high point numbers for 2012, and you were talking about Johnny's Glory not being quite mm-hmm. as good in the speed classes as Delight's High Tone was,
mm-hmm.
but I know that with I'm Billy the Kid, you've done very well in those speed classes.
Yeah, he's very good.
Yeah, and done very well in the reining. So there were a couple of things that I wanted to ask. First of all, what's your favorite versatility class?
Oh boy, that's a tough one. It's like asking you what's your favorite kid, you know.
Gosh.
I like them all. It's kind of like asking me who's my favorite horse. I don't have that either. But I probably tend towards to barrel racing and dressage. I think I've really enjoyed a great deal more than I ever thought I would. I don't know. Water glass I really love. I ride a buck. I've only lost once in my life. I mean, they're all fun. They're just fun classes. I've gotten to enjoy the reining. I wish I had more time to really work on them, because, you know, most reining people probably would look at my reining patterns and probably laugh or be, you know, really disappointed. But I think that's more due to his lack of training schedule and my lack of reining experience. But, you know, we'll go to a few clinics, and there's a lady out here that does trail and some reining, and she's given me a lot of pointers. But, you know, like I said, against other walking horses, he's he does real well. And then even against open classes at the schooling level, he does quite well. And I've kind of gotten to pick it up. It's a lot of fun. But yeah, the thing is with versatility, there's something for everybody. There's there's driving and versatility driving, where you go basically a trail class with the cart. There's the speed events for those that are really like to go fast. There's actually about a year or two ago we put in a division that's called the Extreme Events of Division, where you have extreme cowboy racing, 3-day eventing, the mounted shooting, penning, anything that kind of is a little more extreme with the walking horses that you can
right.
you can participate that and get points. You can just do rail classes if you want. If you just want to do English Western and Two Gate Pleasure, you can earn points in that. There's for the trail riders, there's endurance trail and competitive trail and judge trail rides that you can earn points in. There's just all sorts of things. We just added obviously the dressage, but we added a subdivision of Western dressage for those that are interested in the Western dressage. You can earn points under the dressage category in that. We also under the obstacle trail, we added equine agility, which we're still trying to develop the rules for, but this is basically an in-hand kind of obstacle course. It's kind of like the dog agility classes, and that tends to do well with people who maybe don't like to ride as much but still like to be involved in horses, or people that are a little older and can't ride as well. That gives them an area to compete. So there's really, within the versatility program, there's something for everyone, and we give, obviously the ultimate awards, and let me say that there is a youth division, an adult division, and now an elite adult division for those who are over 60, and you can earn cumulative points to get the supreme or superior championships, there's high points, and then there's also certificates of merits and lower level awards that you can win. So there's plenty of opportunity for people to win and to participate in a large number of divisions. No matter what your interest is, there's a spot for you.
This is Linda too, and I just wanted to add in one thing if I can.
Yeah.
Okay, and of course, it's absolutely true about versatility people being some of the friendliest that you've ever seen that try to help each other out. But the big thing is, kids may not have an access to horses, and if you want to share yours, this is the perfect place to do it. So I should be there with Revelation, and he'll have Shelby Finch from Tennessee that rides him some, and then also I'll have a little 4-H'er from Kentucky on his back part of the time. So the big thing is the money situation and just having access to riding horses, that this is a great, great spot, is to share your horse, because horses teach humans and humans teach horses, so this is the place to do it at.
And that's one thing with the versatility program. It is a horse rider combination. So if the little 4-H'er wants to get points with Revelation, she gets points with that combination, and Revelation can get points with another youth and with an adult. So you can use one horse with multiple riders and earn points, because it is the horse rider combination.
Well, that's great. I'm really looking forward to the versatility show this year, and I hope that we have a lot of folks that will make an effort to come out and participate, and also to just watch and see what's going on. And you may decide that next year you want to enter the World Versatility Show, or get involved in some level as well. So something for everybody. I want to mention too, before I forget, and this is in part versatility, it's part of the division now, I want to congratulate Tracy Pinson. Tracy was on several weeks ago as our guest, and we did an encore show last week of her program that we did on Equestrian Legacy Radio, but she competed at the Calgary Stampede and took fifth place and really did us proud as far as a breed and friends. And when you talk about support, there was a tremendous amount of support that was involved for folks that were cheering Tracy on. So actually, I hope I can get Tracy to come back in the next week or so and talk a little bit about her experience at the Stampede. But walking horse folks really like to share. And I know Tracy told me that there was a young lady that came to one of the Extreme Cowboy races from Hawaii, and Tracy let her ride tough to compete. And so that's really the way walking horse folks are, and the horse community in general is they're warm, caring folks that do things to help each other out and try to get people involved and be supportive of what's going on. Let me mention, too, that not only do we have the World Versatility Show that's going on, and that starts July the 25th through the 27th, but also the Breeders' Futurity is the 29th, and that should be a lot of fun this year with some new classes that have been added. I'm real excited to see the Get a Sire class. I haven't seen one of those in years, and so that's going to be part of that. And then the International Championship Pleasure Show runs July 29th through August the 3rd, and so and that's at the Miller Coliseum as well. So we have 10 days of exciting horse activity that's going on in Murfreesboro, Tennessee at the Miller Coliseum. And if you're a horse lover in any part of the country or out of the country and want to come in and really have a good time, there are 10 days right there of activities to come and get involved in. So we
might I add, the International has a lot of their full scope of versatility classes as well.
Yeah, so it will be a great period of time, and we just encourage folks to put that on their calendar and try to plan on making several of those days if they can as well. Chris, are there any final thoughts that you'd like to share with us?
At the risk of sounding repetitive, I mean, it's the versatility program is just a great place to get started. There's been a lot of people that started out with versatility and, you know, got more into showing in rail classes and won world championships. So, you know, it's we've had world champions that have been versatility champions too. So, you know, it's a place for everybody, and I think it really promotes the horsemanship. It's good for the rider's brain to do something different. It's good for the horse's brain to do something different. I know I've had I have a horse that after I finished with my horse Billy, I'll be working on her next, and she was pretty much a rail horse all of her life, but I'll tell you, she's taken to jumping and dressage and a few of these other divisions like a duck to water because it just does her brain so much good. To do something different and to think, and it's made her a better show horse on the rail, I honestly believe. So I think it's something that is fun for the horse and for the rider, and I would encourage people to give it a try. And like I said, you don't have to be good and really fine polished to come to a show and participate. We just absolutely love to have people give it a shot, and there's plenty of people that are in the versatility program that love to give you pointers and plenty of encouragement.
Well, and we
Ranger T. Walker is going to be doing the flag on Thursday at the World Versatility Show, so if they want to come by and see Ranger T. Walker at Briarfest or at the World Show, he will be there.
Well, and I wanted to mention Briarfest, Linda. That's July the 18th through the 21st at the Kentucky Horse Park in Lexington, Kentucky. And you're going to be there, aren't you?
I am being there. That's why I'm here at the breeder's office today, is to pick up stuff so we can give it out and let people know about the wonderful world of the Tennessee Walking Horse. And
all right.
Just say whoa, because Ernie will be there, and he'll have his uniform on, and Ranger T. Walker will have his outfit on with his badge. So it's a great, great place to come to. But so we'll be at the World Versatility Show and Briarfest.
Well, you're going to have a busy July, as usual, and so put that on your calendar, too, for our listeners. July 18th through the 21st at the Kentucky Horse Park, they'll have the Briar Fest in Lexington, Kentucky, and Linda's going to be there. Ranger T. Walker with Ernie Brubaker will be there, and so that will be a lot of fun as well.
And Sue D. Laurentis's horse, Tennessee Walking Horse, is going to be one of the Briar Model horses this year. So,
so that's
she will
Lady
be there
C.
also with Equine.
Yeah.
She's going to be a Briar Model horse, so come on out
right.
and see her too.
All right, that's great. So see Sue and see Lady C, and so a lot of great activities there. And Jean, we have the event going on, the National Equine Trails Conference, July 18th through the 20th at Rock Hill, South Carolina. And is there still time to make a reservation to be there?
Oh, yes. We invite anyone who wants to come, we've got a space for them.
All right, and how would they contact you or someone to make reservations for that?
The best thing to do is go to the website, and that's www.netc2013.com.
Okay.
That's
so any
Western Trails Conference 2013.com.
All right, so netc2013.com to get information about that and to put that on your schedule as well. So just a lot of great activities that are going on in the horse world. Whether you're a walking horse owner or a fan or whether you have another breed, the trail conference is something that's important for you to get involved in. If you love to trail ride, think that you might in the future and you want to keep the trails open for your children and other generations, make sure to put that on your calendar. Find out how you can get involved and help to keep our trails open and continue the legacy and the heritage of trail riding across this great country. Schedule things to be in Murfreesboro, Tennessee later this month, and I'm not sure yet, but we may be doing a live show from the World Versatility Show this year. Still plans are in the process on that, so if so, we'd look forward to seeing you there on Thursday the 25th. Linda and Chris and Jean, I appreciate so much your taking the time to join us today on Equestrian Legacy Radio. I hope that you'll all come back again and join us and keep us updated as to what's going on. Jean with the NETC conference and the results of that and how we can get involved, and a little report on that activity. And then we certainly want to find out more about what's going on with Versatility with Chris and with Linda. So thank you all very much for being on the show today. I appreciate you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank
real
you
honor.
Well, this has been another great show. I hope that you've enjoyed the show today on Equestrian Legacy Radio. Be back with us next Thursday, and we're going to find out a little bit about what it takes to put on a horse show. We'll have Rick Weiss, who's the Vice President of the Pleasure Division with the Walking Horse Breeders and Exhibitors Association, and I think another guest or two that will be making an appearance as well. So join us next Thursday at noon on Equestrian Legacy Radio at Central Standard Time. And remember, we're heard worldwide online. You can listen to us on your smartphone, your tablet, or your computer. And remember, if you climb in the saddle, get ready for the ride. Thanks for listening.